Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast on the 12th of December. Today we're joined by a professor, Richard Conroy, Chairman of Conroy Gold and Natural Resources. Welcome, Richard.
Very nice to talk with you.
Firstly, congratulations on the recent proposed joint venture with Damir Export.
Thank you very much. And indeed, it's been a long time coming, but very worthwhile. So we're really absolutely delighted and looking forward now to really moving onwards with this project. It is, of course, a very major project. It's a whole new district scale gold area. Magnitude of it is even for ourselves, it's sometimes difficult to take on board how large it is, extending over about 50 miles in length and probably about, 800 square kilometers, 400, 500 square miles, with a whole series of targets along them. Clontibret being the first and the one we're looking forward to developing into a gold mine. But there are a whole series of others on either side of Clontibret itself, and then right it down along this structural fault, the Orlick Bridge Fault, running right down to Slieve Dla, 20 miles or so down to the southeast. So it really is a very big project. It's the sort of project that usually, probably in most parts of the world, if you're very fortunate as a small company, you may discover maybe one deposit, and that's tremendous to do so. And bring in a major with you. But on the trend, there'll be perhaps another 10, 20 other juniors looking in, and two or three more of them perhaps also very lucky and bringing in their majors. But the district then is split up into a whole series of areas and companies and groups and so on. Whereas I suppose people hadn't thought about Ireland as potentially having gold, even though if you're in Dublin ever visiting it, go into the National Museum there, and you'll see some of the most magnificent gold ornaments dating back about 3,000 years anywhere in Western Europe. And the idea that someone would sort of row over in a boat carrying the gold to Ireland to be made up into ornaments always to me seemed rather daft. And certainly the gold must have come locally, and the amount of it was very considerable. So obviously,
Richard, nobody has ever obviously seen the leprechauns and the rainbows, because at the end of every rainbow there's a pot of gold, no? And
it certainly is a great way. It saves an awful lot of time exploring.
So always a leprechaun, no? And you only get leprechauns in Ireland, so that means there's going to be lots of gold there, no?
I mean, it seems like you must have been waiting for this moment for many, many years. I mean, do you want to give us some background into Conroy Gold and what first inspired you?
The background of it was that I knew from a youngster, really, that gold had been found in an old antimony mine in a place called Clontibret in County Monaghan. And this really was an old antimony mine. It was working in the Napoleonic days. It produced antimony, is nowadays regarded as something used in fire resistant and so on. But it also makes shrapnel much nastier than it already is. It hardens it. And this basically was the purpose of this old mine back in, as I said, Napoleonic times. But some guys, it was reopened in the Great War again when there was a lot of explosives being used. And they reopened it, found it in very good order, but the armistice came just before it went back into proper production. And then about 30 or 40 years later, some Canadians came over and they reopened the mine, found it in very good condition, but they knew of the association between antimony and gold. So they tested in back channel samples for gold, and lo and behold, got very good grades. Very excited. And it was in the newspapers at the time. I can remember them. I think I still even have a photograph of something happening there. And they naturally then, having made the discovery, went and drilled all round it. And although they hit gold on every, apart from one hole that was done, but every other hole, intersected gold, but in very, very, very low grades and amounts. And they couldn't understand this, and eventually they just gave up. One or two other operators came in, and same thing happened over again. They drilled a hole near the mine. They would hit gold, but in very low levels. And, you know, it just didn't seem to make sense. And we looked at it for quite a while before we even applied for a license. And then when we got the license, we didn't find any sudden magic solution. We were looking at it, I'd say, for the best part of 2 years, when it suddenly struck us, these people, ourselves included, are using the sort of drilling techniques that you use for base metals, for zinc, which is the big thing in Ireland. We've been involved in it ourselves, Galmoy and so on. Now, if you're looking at zinc in a piece of core, even a layperson, and I'm not a geologist, I'm a layperson, but I can still tell by looking at it that it might be, you know, 5, 10, 20% zinc, whatever it is. You can actually look at it and see it. It's not often that you actually see gold in core. Sometimes you do. You certainly don't see it at Clontibret, and indeed you don't see it in many of the big deposits in Nevada, because the gold is dissolved into the rock, so you don't see it. You can't just judge what's there by looking at it. And of course, a tiny amount of gold can be worth infinitely more than quite a large amount of zinc. But anyway, cutting a long story short, we looked at it, we drilled it, and we're getting the same sort of results. And then suddenly it struck us, we're probably washing away the very core that contains the gold. And that's why we're seeing a trace, but not very much. So we went on to using more expensive, I must say, triple barrel drilling. But triple barrel drilling has the advantage that it doesn't wash away the softer portions of the rock, of the core. And lo and behold, we started to get quite good results, similar to those that had been seen years before in the old antimony mine. So we now knew we were onto something, at the very least onto something around Clontibret. You know, we've been involved in one or two fairly major discoveries before, Galmoy and out in Pogo, the gold mine, that's a world-class gold mine out in Alaska. And in some ways, at Galmoy, we missed out on, for example, discovering the Lachine mine just down along the road. So we're conscious of the fact this gold is here. Is it just something very unusual, happens to be here with this particular antimony and the old mine and immediately around it? Or could it possibly be part of a trend? And of course, that makes a huge difference. It's marvelous to discover a gold deposit, to be lucky enough to do so and so on. But if you actually can discover a trend and can get it licensed to you, you're in a totally different magnitude of potential. Now, it did take a lot of time, really did, much longer than we'd anticipated, and a lot of very hard work. We collected over 20,000 samples of soil now, or of deep overburden, to test for gold. But it has certainly turned out magnificently in that we now have an entire gold district stretching for over 40 miles, an extensive area. And because of the nature of the licensing system in Ireland, so long as you do your work, you don't have to give up a portion of the license. You must fulfill your work commitment. So we, over the years, have gradually been able to build up the licenses which appear to us the most related to the gold trend. But now you come to a stage, and it's taken you a lot of time. The company has put best part of 20 million in over the 20 years doing this. But now you're in a new situation. You say, right, we've discovered a new gold trend. We've shown that in a small portion of the original discovery of Clontibret, where from the old gold mine and from the old antimony mine, you could perhaps, if you're optimistic, say there's maybe a couple of thousand ounces of gold here. We now knew that in a small percentage of the target area, well under 20% of it, we were able to build up over 500,000 ounces of a resource, which most of that, 300,000 of it, is in the indicated or higher category. So we now have a situation right. Let's now move on to the next stage and develop our first mine. But that means that to benefit your shareholders, for them to get real value out of it, instead of going on raising relatively small amounts of money, the sensible thing is to bring in a major partner. But of course, here now, we had a double advantage because we were not merely inviting in a major partner to join in developing a mine. And in actual fact, the partner approached us around the other way around in this particular instance. But you also were inviting them in to a whole new gold trend. And indeed, some of the guys who came on site to visit said they really hadn't realized the size of it until they came and actually had boots on the ground walking around and realized the size and the potential of it. And we're looking here, all has to be proved, drill confirmed, and all the rest of it. But nonetheless, on a fairly conservative basis, we're looking at in the immediate area of Clontibret, Plenish, and Clay Lake. That's sort of about 8 miles in length, that particular area. In other words, it's the northeastern portion alone of the target area. We're looking there, in addition to the 500,000 ounces, a very conservative exploration target is another 9 million ounces. So you're looking roughly at 10 million ounces in that area. And then, of course, as well as that, partly because of funds and the cost of drilling and so on, we're doing that on what's down as far as 200 meters. The gold actually comes to the surface. I can take you over to visit the stream in Clontibret, show you the rocks there, and they're gold-containing rocks. And from them, on the surface, if you go down 200 meters, most of our drilling indeed has been to about 150 meters. That's the basis for our 500,000, and indeed the basis for the 8 to 9 million. What's down below the 200 meters? We don't know, except that it almost, well, we know there's gold down below it. How far does it go? How much of it there is, and so on. So it's tremendously exciting. And then, as well as the potential to depth, you've also the fact that stretching right across to Slieve Tla, 20-odd miles away, there are a series of other targets, any of which could be comparable or as bigger or smaller as the case may be to Clontibret. In fact, as regards Clontibret itself, as I said, we've 500,000 ounces on less than 20% of the target. So it's not unreasonable to expect that even down to 200 meters, we'll have a couple of million ounces at Clontibret. The Clay Lake target is much bigger than Clontibret. Plenish target is also slightly bigger than Clontibret. So there's tremendous potential there. But on the other hand, the potential for the small company is going to require a great deal of money. It's going to require a great deal of technical expertise and the development of the mine, a great deal of organizational, financial, and again, technical ability and so on. So the sensible thing, therefore, is to bring in a major partner who'll have the funds and the expertise and so on. But then you want, as far as possible, to retain as large a portion of the, in this case, of the region as you can, including all the deposits. And usually you're pretty lucky as a junior if you hold on to 5, 10, 15% of it. We have the opportunity and the deal that we've done to hold on to as much as 42.5%. That's a pretty large percentage to hold on to. We have a number of other options as well. We could get a carry for 25%, or we could have a net smelter royalty. But the one that we'll certainly be going for will be to hold on to the 40-plus percent. And that applies to each of the targets. It starts with Clontibret. But let's say we develop Clay Lake and it's brought to construction ready status, we will still retain over 40% of it. And the same with any of the other targets, Rockcurry, Lenish, Slieve La, any of these other ones. And this, of course, is very important from the point of the small company transforming the effort that they, all the people working for it have made over the years. And we've had the good luck to have this tremendous success and fortune. And now we can see it moving ahead very rapidly, accelerating, and yet at the same time retain a very meaningful, a very major percentage of the potential.
Yeah.
So that's been the sort of rationale. Discover something which had world-class potential.
Yeah.
You have to work very hard at it, and quite honestly, have a great deal of luck as well, and we've been very lucky.
So here you are, you know, an AIM minnow, sub at the time of when it was announced, probably sub 10 million market cap.
Absolutely.
What has attracted a major Fortune 500 company like Demir Export to actually come and see this and go, oh wow, we want to get involved in a JV with such a small capped, nano capped company? Can you tell us what actually, how you kind of, you know, put your cards on the table, showed your poker hand to them?
Well, as it so happened, it was they who came to us. I don't think this, we've had for the last couple of years or so a booth out at the main mining conference, the PDEC conference, as it's called, out in Toronto. And for the first year or so that we had our booth, first couple of times, I think it was more a question of making people aware in the mining industry that there was potential for gold in Ireland. But as it so happened, at the last conference just before COVID closed, you know, all travel down, you might say, the guys, our geologists working on the boot, they were kept going from 10 o'clock on Sunday when it started, right through till 11:30 on Wednesday when it closed. And this is a big conference, 20-odd thousand people attending it. And they were busy, a lot of people looking to come and make site visits. And before that, a number of the major companies had come and made site visits and certainly were very, I think it's fair to say, very seriously interested. But as it so happens, so there's knowledge about this in the industry. But as it so happens, the joint venture colleagues from Demir, they approached us. They didn't come to us at our stall out in Canada. They approached us, and I'm sure they had done their homework. And it does mean a lot. We're, as I said, holding on to as much as we can, and the 40% is a very good percentage to be holding. And this is very unusual for a major. Most majors, as I've just mentioned, will take over a deposit which a junior has discovered. It may be a small deposit, maybe a very large deposit, but it's a one-only deposit, and the major takes that over. And some other major will have taken over the other deposit that's been discovered 5 miles down along the road. That doesn't apply here. We have the entire area. So for a major coming in, it was one of the reasons why many of the largest gold companies in the world actually came and made site visits to us. And I think if it hadn't had COVID, I don't know, might well have had some other partner or partners, because there are certainly other people interested. But I must say, we found the Demir people very good. They've kept excellent to work with. And what we agreed in the letter of intent is once again agreed in the agreement that we'll be putting to the shareholders on the 22nd. And they have a great opportunity. But curiously enough, in some ways, it's particularly suited. They are, as you mentioned, part of a very large group, one of the largest in the world. But as it so happens, they are, although they have a very big mining capacity and a number of mines, including gold mines in Turkey, they haven't all the spread, as yet anyway, properties throughout the world. Whereas if you're talking with some of the major gold mining companies, one sometimes wondered, yes, they would certainly develop it and have all the funds and expertise, but they might well say, well, we'll fit it into the program in 5 years' time or something like that, which is fine for the major, but not terribly attractive to the company which has made the discovery.
That's right. It's Koch, is it? I don't know how you actually pronounce it.
The Kirsch family, yes.
Yeah, the Kirsch family. So, I mean, currently they're worth in US dollar terms around 7 to 8 billion market cap. Just so people know, I think if you've ever had one of those Beko, is it Beko or
Beko?
Beko fridges or washing machines or whatever, they are also part of the same family that does that, just so there's some sort of connection. Yes,
they are very big.
Very big Turkish family and the biggest listed company in Turkey as well, I think. But I just want to bring you back to Klontyrp. I'm going to be rubbish at pronouncing this now, even though I've lived there.
Okay. Klontyrp. Pretend there's a D on the end. It's Klontyrp.
Klontibrit. Okay, there you go. Okay, so if we look at Klontibrit and you say that a resource of 2 million ounces is produced.
No. The resource that we have at the moment is not 2 million ounces, half a million ounces, of which 300,000 is indicated, 200,000 is inferred. But that resource is only on about, certainly less than 20% of the target area as indicated by the gold and soil samples that we've taken. So there's a large area that we haven't even drilled yet. Where we have drilled, we're only down to a couple of 100 meters. So this is why I say I think it's not unreasonable to suggest that there'll be another couple of million ounces in Klontibrit itself. It certainly looks very much like that.
Okay, so what I'm doing is saying to you, I'm putting you in your time machine and you're a year or 18 months down the line and 2 million resources is identified, okay, which is what you hope, okay? Even at a sales price of $300 per ounce, so we're not going to mine it. Someone else is just going to mine it. At 300, this is a resource base of $600 million, of which Conroy will get 42.5%. So that is $225 million. So in other words, maybe 170, 160 sterling or euro, whichever way you want to look at it. And right now, Conroy is valued at about 13.5 to 14 million pounds. Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, the figures, when you start to do them, even on a fairly conservative basis, and we tend to be a bit conservative, perhaps, the figures can just be very big. But this is the whole point, you know, and I've been involved for quite a long time in exploration. I've had the good fortune to be successful. We discovered, as I think you know, the Galmoy zinc ore bodies, which revived the zinc-based metal industry in Ireland. Ireland is now an international zinc province. But there was also perhaps less well-known involved in the discovery of the Pogo gold mine in Alaska, which is a world-class gold mine. So one is very much aware that one has been very fortunate, because if you set up an exploration company and go out to look, and you may have some very good people working for you, very good geologists and so on, but the odds are very much, unfortunately, against you. So if you want to, as it were, succeed, you have to be very focused on what you're looking at. Is there the potential there for something which is going to be economic, which is going to be a profit, and not only make a profit, but which reflects a proper risk-reward ratio? If your risk is very high, then if you're fortunate enough to discover something, it should be a reward which covers that very high risk that you've taken. And that is, if you're very lucky, that's what happens. And I think we have had the good fortune to be very lucky with this. But some of the figures really are very, very large indeed. But I have to say, still has to be drilled, still has to be confirmed, and so on. But certainly the way it's going, there could be some very large figures indeed involved. And we're in the fortunate position that under this deal, we retain or can retain over 40% of it. So it's a magnificent position, to quite honest, to be in. Yeah. Remember, it's taken us 20 years to get here. A lot of hard work and time and all the rest of it.
Yes, no, a lot of pain, I'm sure, along the way.
Absolutely.
And so in terms of the mine itself, we're going to have this probably focused on where the JORC report is as it stands at the minute. Okay. So this is going to be an open pit mine, more than likely.
The likelihood is it's also possibly feasible as an underground mine. I think the likely development will be initially as an open pit mine, because the gold actually comes to the rock right up to the surface. So it makes sense to think that you would start with an open pit, perhaps extend that pit a bit, and then go underground. I think that'll be the logical, rational way of developing. That will possibly also apply to some of the other areas just around Clontibret itself, and for example over towards Clay Lake, there in both Cargillascorne and Derrynhennet, which are two major parts of Clay Lake. Again, you dig a trench and you're down on the gold bearing rock. So again, the likelihood is to start with open pitting and go underground. But that will be very much up the table. We'll be looking at it, obviously, very thoroughly and very exactly. Certainly in the initial stages, the likelihood is going to be open pit. But on the other hand, as I said, we haven't drilled any deep holes yet. We don't know what's down underneath. Could be something very exciting or interesting down there. We won't know until we drill it. And then, of course, it could become tilted towards, obviously, an underground mine. You wouldn't go way deep with an open pit.
Yeah, so from that perspective that you're talking about an open pit mine, how encouraging are the mining operations or the government mining situation, both in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland?
Both jurisdictions, the governments are very much intent on development. Certainly that applies in Northern Ireland, and quite rightly so. In Republic of Ireland, of course, they're well used to mining. We've had the Navan mine going since, I think, the early 70s. We ourselves were involved for a number of years with the Galmoy mine and various companies with the Lachine mine. And of course, just below us in the same county of Monaghan, where Clontibret is, you have the very large gypsum mine is working there. So mining is well known. And as well as that, there are numerous quarries right across both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. In Northern Ireland as well, you've had a small gold mine working for a number of years. A larger mine is now going through the planning process. Another discovery that's been made there will be quite a substantial mine and some very rich grades in it. And as well as that, of course, people perhaps don't realize it, but in the north of Ireland, you have a very, very large salt mine quite close to I think, where you visited yourself at some stage or other in Northern Ireland. There is the potential there. It'll have to be done with very high environmental standards. But as far as that goes, we're very happy that at Galmoy and indeed at Lachine and also, I must say, at Tara, these mines are now in the mining textbooks as examples of modern mines, which have the sort of environmental standards that are rightly expected nowadays from mines. So we will hopefully maintain that. Indeed, the tailings, which we devised at Galmoy in association with Golder Associates, they did a very good job on it, and it's actually got a green award, which is very nice to have. And then as regards gold itself, apart from the enormous financial value of gold, apart from its role in the jewelry industry, because of its properties in gold, On the one hand, it's technical properties, the way it can stretch for enormous distances, the way it reflects infrared light, which is meant that it's used in anything and on all sorts of things, from the rather esoteric space flights. It's in use there to protect the astronauts from infrared rays, to increasing the value of light reflectors in houses and windows and so on. It's essential for, and will be even more so required in relation to many of the modern battery type developments that we're looking at, and other developments of that technical developments. But as well as that, of course, it's extraordinarily non-toxic. You can swallow gold quite comfortably. Indeed, some medicines contain a little amount of gold. But also, you can recycle it. If there's one example of the circular economy or of recyclability or of sustainability, it's gold. Some of the gold that we're using today has been around for the last couple of thousand years. Yeah. And about 37% of gold even today is recycled annually. So it's
actually it's money and has been for centuries, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Millennia. And when we've got all this stuff going on with cryptocurrencies that effectively are backed by fresh air, and we've got the fiat currencies that are still backed by fresh air but governments, then you know there is going to be a place for gold, I'm sure. And you know, we don't really talk about the value of gold, but many people are talking about the value of gold increasing exponentially over the next number of years,
We need the death of crypto now, and then gold, hopefully, everybody now moves the money out of the new gold. And, you know, because it's just taken the place of it. You know, it was always a hedge against inflation was gold. And it tipped over the $2,000, didn't it, about what, 6 to 8 months ago? And it's just dwindled back to the sort of 1750 mark. And I just can't wait to see the precious metals like silver and gold go back up, you know.
I know you were mentioning there about the two governments and so on, and the cryptocurrency and so on, but the government here has actually, for the first time in many, many years, actually bought gold. I think you're going to, you know, see a bit of that by many other countries as well. Gold is something pretty permanent. We, by the way, have, and I agree with you, I think that the likelihood is that the price of gold may well go up somewhat, perhaps even considerably. But we do all our calculations on very conservative estimates, down as low as $1,250 for gold. I don't think it's going to go anywhere near as low as that. But nonetheless, in what we're looking at, we could still make a profit on relatively low gold values. But I think, if anything, they'll at least stay where they are and perhaps even go up quite a bit.
Yeah, everything's really going to be based around your AISC, or all the in sustaining costs, ultimately. And if it is a pit rather than underground mining, then that's obviously going to be significantly cheaper. And when I look at some of the things that you put out of the post-resource calculation drilling results, you know, you got a high of 24.4 grams a ton, granted only for a meter, but you know, there's 21 grams, 12 grams, 11 grams. You know, these, in terms of world gold grades, these are tremendous. I mean, anything above a gram is normally economical, or is economic. You know, if you get any sort of grades like this, it's going to be phenomenally cheap to get it out the ground.
We're certainly happy with the grades and so on. I think we've been very fortunate indeed. But we still try to go, it's better to be on the conservative side. And okay, if it turns out even better, that's great. But at least if you're on the conservative side and working on that, you know you're on fairly firm ground.
So all eyes now are on the 22nd, now the EGM, obviously. Also, the EGM, because it is an extraordinary general meeting for the whole signing off of the JV. Yeah. Now, presumably that isn't going to be taken on the day and inked on the day. It's got to be wet signed before that. So obviously it will be the announcement will be done then, but it is hopefully going to be done and ratified before that day. Is that correct thinking, or would it actually be done on that day?
Well, the EGM is essential for a matter such as this, which is transformational for the company. Obviously, it's obligatory, certainly under Irish company law, for us to hold a general meeting of shareholders before finalising such a deal. And from the point of view of the AIM market, again. Yeah. And I think it's section, is it 15, whichever it is, it is essential that we seek shareholders. And all that I've said now, I think it's a, as you see, I think it is a very good deal. But at the end of the day, the shareholders have to ratify it before we can go ahead. And then there are various regulatory things, which certainly from the government and so on, they have to give their imprimatur over transfer of licenses and things like that. So it all does. But the absolutely crucial thing now is for the shareholders to decide, do they support this? Do they approve of the directors going ahead and signing this agreement?
Yeah.
And hopefully will. And certainly some shareholders have been in touch, including some of the larger shareholders, and they've indicated they're very...
It's effectively a vote of a number of votes from the number of shares that they hold, and then that takes it over. And then hopefully then we'll see an RNS with the... you know, all resolutions passed effectively would be the way.
I would hope so, indeed. Yeah.
So in terms of value accretion over the next 6 to 8 months and moving on further than that, what do you see as being the accretive milestones that are coming up for the events? Obviously, there's going to be starting to get the drill rigs on site there at Clontibret, but can you talk us through how you see things playing out over the next year or two?
I think that there will be total change in the rate of acceleration. If you're in a situation, exploration situation, you're drilling perhaps a hole or perhaps three or four holes and looking to see the results of those holes, and hopefully they're good or encouraging results. Now, but that's the past now. Now we're looking at a situation in which you are building up the resource, as you said. How far do we go with building up the resource at Clontibret? Because that's where we'll be bringing in the first mine. But we'll be doing it at a vastly accelerated pace. You'll have rigs working pretty well continuously. You'll be doing the other work that is necessary as well when you're bringing in a mine. And as well as that, of course, we'll be fulfilling our work obligations and commitments and the other licenses, but also looking to see, well, what will be the next one coming up over the horizon? So the actual amount of work, it won't all suddenly start on the sort of 1st of January, which it could, but there'll be a very measured, gradual build-up, but at a totally different rate of progress, because now we'll have the funds. For example, as you'll see in the have seen in the agreement, in the first couple of phases alone, we'll be spending £10 million and probably considerably more than that. And that's almost half what we've spent in the last 20 years. So the rate of work, we're now in a whole new phase. It's a new ball game. And one will be seeing, obviously, results coming out with this expedited drilling program. So it's going to be a lot of excitement, a lot of news, but in virtually a whole new domain almost. So it's really, and it's going to be very big, because you're not only bringing in one mine, but you're also looking to bring up other deposits as well. So it's going to be in some ways very challenging, but also very exciting. It's be tremendous, really. I'm really looking forward to it with great excitement. More than once before, I've been involved in bringing in a mine, but I certainly have been involved in both bringing in a mine and bringing forward a whole new district with the likelihood of several further mines following up on it. It's of a magnitude which is quite difficult, in actual fact, to take on board, even for ourselves.
Yeah.
It is.
And in terms of the assays and things, is there a local laboratories where the assays can be sent in Ireland, or will they going to have to go into Europe to be assessed?
No, we have in Ireland the OMAC laboratories, which are part of ALS, which is a probably the biggest group laboratories, and it's situated in Loughrea near Galway, and indeed it got set up as a small laboratory with the original discoveries of Tina of zinc down there, then of Tara, and then of our good selves. But now about 95% of its assays is from abroad, from Africa and South America and various other countries. That it does. It's a very big laboratory. It's been enlarged again recently, but it's very convenient for us because you can literally put our core in a van, as it were, and have it there, started assaying within a couple of days of actually cutting it from following the drilling.
Brilliant. It'd be good to get to know them pretty well, won't it? So you get a priority on those assays.
Well, they're certainly very helpful, but we have to take our place in the queue. We're not the only customer.
I know a man who can in Ireland. Anyway, what I was going to say to you is I'm sure you must be very proud that this is going to produce a huge amount of value for Ireland as a whole.
It'll be quite exciting. Quite significant both for Ireland as a whole, as you rightly say. It runs literally across the border. As the Clay Lake target that I've mentioned a few times as we've been talking is in Northern Ireland, and it's a very large target. It's much larger than the Clontibret target. So it could indeed be significant even in terms of the overall economy of Northern Ireland, as well indeed as the economy of the Republic of Ireland also. So it's and it's going to be long-term, and it's going to give long-term employment.
Do you think that once this is hopefully ratified and, you know, EGM's done and it's a done deal, do you think that there'll be the media or the Globe and the national media and the BBC will be over and actually want to visit this area?
They have been, and they've produced two very nice, one by the BBC and one by RTE. To be quite honest, they were ahead of a lot of the rest of the media, and they've been very supportive, I must say. And of course, they'll be looking forward to the development of the mine. That'll be quite an exciting event and a newsworthy event. And we'll probably have some other newsworthy events as we progress with the drilling. But the great thing now is we're in a whole new dimension, a whole new sphere with what was a hope, and that's all it could be. But it's turned out very luckily, very successfully, and great credit to all the guys who have been doing all the hard work over the years. But now this has come to a new stage when you actually begin to see the rewards from the success, and they could be fairly. Some of the figures are really quite big when you start to do a couple of them there, and some of them really are quite big. It's a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, it's going to also. I mean, knowing that part of the world reasonably well myself, the employment opportunities in those areas is not vast. So this is really going to help the rural, communities to have. And long-term jobs as well for whatever that mine length's going to be, 10, 20, 30 years or however long. Yeah,
I'd say this will be going on for many years ahead, but you're right, they're jobs, and they're good solid jobs, and they're fairly well-paid jobs, many of them indeed. And as well as that, the thing certainly surprised us when we brought in our mine at Galmoy. We were forecasting 1.5 to 2 times would be the sort of employment, extra mine and employment that we'd create. And it was actually over 4. So we're very pleased with that. And you know, in all sorts of ways that you don't even think about. You think of the media things, supplying services to the mines and so on. But somehow the actual activity seems to create other activity in all sorts of ways. And certainly, I think with what we're hoping to do, that will be the situation. And it's in an area, rightly, as you say, on both sides of the border, where they could do with employment, additional employment.
It's going to have an exponential effect, just like it's going to have an exponential effect on your share price as well, which is all good.
we've had the opposite for many a long while, and very under.
Anyway, I have one more interesting question. What, you are a trained, I think, doctor stroke surgeon.
I qualified as a doctor, that is correct, and I practiced as a doctor. I would hesitate to describe myself as a surgeon. I was just a physiologist teaching the students for a large part of the time.
Feel free to operate on Kevin, though, if you want.
I need this on you, Kevin.
That's fine. Yalla. Now I think you've found the rainbow, and all you need to do is find that little man, and you'll be fine.
I should have realized that would have saved an awful lot of trouble.
It would have done. You should have spoken to me 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Just
look for the rainbow, find the leprechaun, all done.
So I've got one last question, because Kev got a long one in there, and this is going to be a lot simpler to answer. Not simpler, but it'll be a lot quicker. It's the Sunday roast. What is your favorite Sunday roast?
I like a well-done Sunday roast, I must say. Really good beef. And the beef in Scotland, Ireland and England is far better than the beef you'll get anywhere else in the world.
Brilliant, I agree. I think beef and lamb is the way forward, but I think beef just pips it.
And a good Irishman, he wants it well done. No red at all.
No, he didn't mean well done as in medium. He meant well done as in extreme, you know, a good one.
No, he means well done, isn't that right?
No, he doesn't. Professor Richard Conroy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What an extremely nice gentleman he is. And you know, what I like to see there is that the hard work of 20 years plugging away, not just at that same license or that same prospect, Clontibret, but the fact that it's now starting to come to fruition. It's been massively de-risked. They've got a Fortune 500 company on board potentially. And I think, now you just, you know, wait for the formality of the EGM on the 22nd and, you know, let the brakes off it.
As you say, very nice gentleman. Committed a lot of time and effort and stuff throughout the years to get to this point, and had a big picture. I think he had a big picture that this was going to be a huge gold system, not just, you know, one gold mine in two different jurisdictions in the north of Ireland and also in the Republic.
Yeah, I mean, it's 65 kilometer gold district.
If you take him, you know, what he was encouraging, that there could be 2 million ounces on the first mine, even to sell that, never mind how much they would get of profit.
I'm going to put my neck out and say, assuming that it all goes through, yeah, and it's all good, which is, you know, as I say, it seems like a formality. If this company isn't 100 million cap by this time next year, then I give up on life. I give up on the markets. I give up on everything. Yeah.
Don't give up on life just because of that. Well, unless it's the company life.
Yeah, nice. Sorry, I think you should chill out.
Yeah, if chill isn't 100 million company by this time next year, then I will give up life.
The irony is, chill has absolutely no place to be 100 million cap company, but Conroy does, so that there's no sense in what you just said. So yeah, I'm sorry, I'm out. If this isn't 100 million cap even within 6 months of this conversation, then I don't know what to do.
Something's wrong.
Yeah,
it's 13.5 million pounds at the minute, and it's just finished at 34.37. So 100 million is going to be 7.5 times that current share price. So it should be between, let's give it a range, between £2 and £2.50 within 12 months, by next Christmas, let's say, by the end of the year. If it's not, I think you're right. Because I just look at it, and if they do the 2 million ounces at the first mine, proven up, $300 for that as a cost to buy it. If somebody wanted to come in and just buy it and do it themselves, that's $600 million. They get 42% of that. That's $250 million or more, I think. Yeah, $250 million. So about £180 million should be the value for that resource. And that's without any other resource. And you heard him say, they think there should be 9 to 10 million of resource in those three plays. one in Northern Ireland and the other two moving into the Republic of Ireland. 9 to 10 million.
Yeah, don't talk about it anymore. I'm done. You're depressing me. And you know what? It just gives you more chance to, you know, not let it be on the radar. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's GGP got? 3.2 or 4 million ounces?
Something like that. But the and market's missing them.
It's worth £1 billion. It doesn't have 40%, I don't think. How much does GGP have of
Less, isn't it? It's less as a JV. But anyway, moving on, because I'm not going to dwell on this one. It'll just depress me.
Need to buy some more.
Is there another one that the market largely missed, which was a game changer or a gangbuster, however you want to call it, barnstormer, was the RNS this week from Extract Resources, which was where they identified a new porphyry copper system on the Bushranger project in Australia. And two drill holes intersected new copper mineralized porphyry system. And potentially, if you read the comments from Colin Burr, the executive chairman at the end, it says we have also commenced a new hole to test another geophysical anomaly separate from Racecourse and Ascot. So this has been named, the first one was Racecourse, and then they've now got Ascot.
Extract also put a tweet out there just after the RNS saying that potentially this one is bigger than Racecourse. So Ascot could be bigger than Racecourse. That's what they said.
I mean, I think it's just lining up to become what is a world-class major copper mine in a safe jurisdiction. So again, market value, something current round about the 50 million cap. And once they can get to that magic 2 million tons of contained copper, which is looking more and more likely as they start to identify these porphyries where, as you mentioned, this is bigger than the original. Ascot's bigger than Racecourse. There's another large anomaly. Who knows whether that's going to be bigger? Well, we'll find out hopefully in due course. But the reality of the situation is that we're in a position now where it could trigger that the deal with Anglo-American at any point. I mean, at what point does Colin play his cards, play his poker hand and say, come on, guys, are you looking at this? And you need to make an offer.
Yeah, and do they have to pay extra for Ascot? Because basically it's just Racecourse, maybe.
Answers on a postcard for that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Because Racecourse was not even in the equation when the deal was struck. So maybe Ascot's a different ballgame. I don't know. You mentioned Tirupati. They had news about production there as well, I think.
Again, yeah, I mean, that was another great RNS. And it reacted pretty well, went up about 20%. But the commercial production commencement at Vatamina. And it's fantastic when you look at what they've achieved. If you read through the RNS and look at what they've actually achieved over this year, it's been a really, really successful year for them. And since the listing and the share price, it just doesn't have any, there's no correlation. I think it's around about the placing price. It's around 79.80p. And I think the placing was around that 75-80 mark. So it's only just at that. And yet they've, Vatamine is there, recovery rate of 90%, product grades of up to 96%, 70% jumbo and large flake. I mean, it's just phenomenal, really. And then they're aiming for 30,000 tons per annum by the middle of next year before reaching that magical figure of 84,000 tons per annum by the end of 2024. So it is looking really good. It's certainly looking like another one that's just the market just hasn't seen the true potential of.
Yeah, and you've got Rambler Metals there, and a new investor came in with just under 4%. I don't think it was off market. I think it was one of the companies that did some of the funding, then sold it on to an institutional investor. But still, if you look at the institutional investor, very positive to have institutional investor on board. I mean, again, they're just about to finish the hedge. The production has been ramped up. They've also ramped up the grades. It's going to be over 2% by the looks of things, or around 2%. And when they get to this 1,350 tons per day at 2%, which is their stated aim and has been all year, even though they've got nowhere near it, it looks like it's going to start to happen pretty shortly. The free cash flow from that is going to be pretty significant. And that will undoubtedly have a re-rate because of this. We're just waiting, just like everything else on the market. Nobody's forward looking. It is just waiting for the things to happen. Then they'll price them in. So when that changes, this market is going to have a serious re-rate. When people start looking forward, which is what shares are supposed to be all about, you look forward and see what the potential value is rather than just price everything as if it's going to fail. Then we're going to be in a different game, I think. And there's some serious catch up to do in my view anyway, but I understand the mechanics and the mindset of people, but there are so many opportunities out there in terms of things that, you know, it's almost certain they're going to happen and there's nothing priced in for them, you know. And Conroy is a good example here today that we've spoken about. Everybody's
it almost gets you down in a sense of desperation of like grabbing the whoever, you know, obviously whoever it is, the market makers, or obviously they to a large extent control the prices and let stocks go up and rise, and it just feels like they're making the money these days by just using the daily swings to make the money rather than, you know, acquiring or getting a large amount of stock together, because a lot of people are still holding on to the stocks even though they're probably underwater on them. And then, you know, not letting them rise and go like they used to. And where we've seen some RNSs that normally in a market, in a normal market, in an orderly market, would have put the stock up 100%, 150%, even 200%, which we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks in some gangbuster RNSs. And they're not doing that. And it just frustrates you. You almost feel like banging your head against the wall. Like, when is it going to actually come to some sense of normality of the, you know, when are they going to see the market makers? They're meant to be, you know, confident in the companies that are on their exchanges or on the markets. Like, you know, yeah, there's a lot of companies that require capital and that's why they go on the markets, but these are companies that are cashed up. These are healthy companies that have got good profits, good revenues, that are still not getting to real values.
No, absolutely. I mean, you look at, you know, we laughed about life, but life's becoming comical really in terms of its value to revenue situation, you know. And obviously Aquis is doing it no good whatsoever, but to be 1 point, I think it was 4p or something like that, 1.4, yeah. 1.3,
I can't even look, I'm not even looking at
1.5, you know. It values the company at about 12-13 million pounds, yeah. And it had revenues of 4.6 million. Now granted, it's taken on a lot of costs, of this there is no dispute, but it has so much potential going forward in terms of its UFC deal, in terms of it's on Amazon now, in terms of its AJ, even though he got stuffed, you know, as a sponsor and as a way of getting the CPD stuff to athletes, to market, to, you know, the rest of the world, if you like, because, you know, Love Hemp is sold and people are buying it. It's not necessarily the most popular one or the best or whatever way you want to put it. I mean, if you speak to anybody who's invested in Love Hemp, they will probably shoot me for saying that, but that's the reality. It's a marketing machine that effectively needs to sell Love Hemp. And they seem to have all the right things in place. The wrong market, or sorry, the wrong place that it's listed. So the sooner the uplist comes, the better, I think. And hopefully you're going to get some sense into the market and actually it starts to value itself. I mean, it's got to be worth twice, maybe three times what it's worth, especially as you would imagine that revenues should be increasing as time goes by. And, you know, the UFC deal and going into America as a white label should be huge in terms of revenue. I mean, and even if they don't make a huge mark.
Yeah, it's just getting that in place, and hopefully that'll come to fruition. Now, you probably know we it's going to be Tony Calamita, CEO, is going to be on next week, which is going to be the Sunday Roast finale of the season. So, because obviously there's going to be a break for Christmas, as you know, it's that'll be the 19th of December, I believe, for that one to go out. Now, the other thing which we're going to announce is the fact that we're going to be doing this 12 stocks for the 12 days of Christmas, where we pick 12 stocks between us. And we've already done the list, and we are going to then create a podcast, very short and shorter podcast there at this point. And then we will put that out over the 12 days of Christmas. So, and these are going to be stocks, Kev, right, that we think have got potential for 2022 going forward that are currently undervalued, and that we really see them as being a little bit neglected, maybe a little bit under the radar, but also there are some stocks in there that will have revenues coming in or are already revenue generated.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few of them that are revenue generated, and we just think they're undervalued. It's as simple as that. And 2022 could be a real year for all of them, we believe. So this hopefully is a way of making money. Yeah, we are invested in some of them, not all of them by any stretch. We also decided, you know, we are all in a very, very fortunate position that we've actually got money to invest. So we decided also that we would do some sort of charity thing. So we put a poll up about what charities we should support. And we're hoping you're going to help us there. You're going to support us. We're going to put a Just Giving page up, and the money's going to come in. And assuming we get to £1,500, we are going to match that in terms of the roast. And then we'll see how much we can get. We're going to choose three charities initially, which would be effectively £1,000 for each charity. If we get more than that, then maybe we'll go to four charities. Who knows? But, you know, we are very fortunate. You know, we're in the top probably 1% of the world population in terms of the fact we have a roof over our head, we have food to eat, we have heat, and, you know, we have money in our bank. You know,
especially,
and we have
Christmas
money in
our
shirts.
Yeah, especially at Christmas this time of year when we've got the situation where people, you know, the fact that there are people homeless in this country, I mean, you know, it's not being arrogant, but in one of the top developed countries in the world, the UK, and we are seeing, you know, I'm not going to get into political debate, but, you know, it's crazy that we allow, and even veterans, you know, you see these guys who fought for the country in you know, whether that be in the Gulf War or, you know, the Second Gulf War or wherever, even in Afghanistan, and you're seeing these war veterans on the street, and there are the sick part is there are some properties in London that are rented out or not even lived in by some, you know, Russian oligarchs or Chinese investors. And yet there are people on the street. I get your head around that. I can't quite get my head around it. But anyway, so the point is, you know, at this time of year, we've got a lot of the homeless. Help with them. Help the aged as well. You know, they can't pay there. Some of them can't even afford to turn the heating on. And you hear horror stories about that. So, yeah, we've selected a kind of about seven or eight different charities. Some's like, you know, The Big Issue, some for Age UK, Shelter, Christians in Poverty. We've got, you know, quite a wide range, obviously Children's. We've got Make-A-Wish Foundation. We've got the Great Ormond Street. So, you know, what we'll do is, as Kev says, we'll pick probably the top four of those. If we get to £4,000, and we'll pump £1,000 into each one as a little token gesture.
That's us for today, I think. It's been very interesting speaking with Professor Conroy. I don't really even know the words, but I think it's very interesting to see that somebody had the time and the effort and the willingness to go for 20 years to find the situation. And now you as an investor are in that situation where you can benefit from all of that. That is like a good opportunity.
The work he's done in the past, you know, to recognize the mines, the previous mines. He talked about the zinc, talked about what he's created for Ireland and putting it on the map, producing the first commercial mines. And also the history that you recognized as an MP and as a surgeon. This is the penultimate show of 2021. And going forward, we will be releasing, as I mentioned, the 12 stocks for the 12 days of Christmas. All the jingles have been recorded. So, you know, Kev was in the studio putting on his quintessential classic British voiceovers.
Jingle bells, Santa smells, Rudolph ran away.
Okay, yeah. On that note, on that bombshell, we're off. All right, have a good one. Speak to you soon.
Bye-bye. God bless.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.